This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Over the past year, we've been featuring an occasional series of conversations with Massachusetts college presidents, getting to know who they are, the institutions they lead, and their take on the primary challenges in higher education. Today, a conversation with Boston University President Robert Brown.
Now, BU has been in the news a lot this year. Just this week, a former star BU hockey player was sentenced to 2 years probation for assaulting a student in her dorm room. In February, another hockey player was arrested on rape charges, and prosecutors later dropped those charges in June.
In the spring, extreme hazing incidents at several sororities and fraternities put BU in the headlines again. Later on, the shooting death of a graduate student and a fatal car accident involving BU students studying abroad in New Zealand also rocked the Boston campus.
Now, when I visited President Brown's offices earlier this month, we talked about his career, the cost of college, and his continuing optimism for BU's future. But first, you'll hear how he thinks BU has weathered this tumultuous year. As Robert Brown himself puts it, it was one of the most difficult in the university's history.
I don't actually think, and we've done a lot of analysis of this and looking at it, that our problem is either our challenge is more severe than it was 5 years ago, or it's significantly different than anyone else's. As you know, as we launched a task force on the culture and climate of the hockey team, I think there are, and the reason we did this, we believe there are in the NCAA regulations and how high-profile hockey is played, some real challenges with the integration of a hockey team within an academic campus. That report's just about to come to me, and we'll be talking about that going forward.
If I may, just forgive me for interrupting, but it seemed to be, to me and to many others, quite an extraordinary step that you took to create this task force. I mean, because another option would have been to say, perhaps legitimately, these were isolated incidents that don't necessarily have a reflection upon the culture of sport at BU, or hockey in particular, in general.
What I try to do is not prejudge things. But I think the only way to know how to go forward is to have done that. Now, it could be, and I won't prejudge what the report says, it could be to say there is nothing special. Or it could be there are. You would not know unless you did the report, do the work. And it's the way, you know, maybe that's the research scientist in me. You just do the work and see what the answer is on the other side.
Do you think that Boston University in particular has a problem? I mean, alcohol was pointed to as a linking factor in all of these things. Does BU have a particular problem on campus?
I personally believe that alcohol on college campuses is one of the most difficult challenges that all college presidents and university administrations deal with. Do I believe that in a community of 32,000 students, 16,000 undergraduates, 16,000 graduate students, that you're going to have some people doing just ridiculous things? Yes. Do I believe that that was connected with any kind of large-scale culture? No, other than it did involve alcohol, and this is pervasive on college campuses today. It was probably the hardest year on the leadership of this institution that I've ever experienced, right?
And how do you think the university has weathered that year?
Amazingly. One of the things that I think we've been open and honest with the community, talking through all of these issues and grieving together when it was appropriate to grieve. And it's been interesting how the community has reacted. And not surprisingly, we're a big university. We're not homogeneous. It's very heterogeneous. And so when you talk to students about the action of those young men in that building, the so-called fraternity, it gets very compartmentalized by those students. You know, that's just stupid, silly, I don't understand, but that's not what I do, right? It's very much a city inside the city in that sense. That's a good aspect of it. And we spent a lot of time trying to pull it together and make it more homogeneous for people to understand that actions of others actually affect their reputation and the institution as a whole.
What can, if anything, BU as an institution do regarding, you know, alcohol as, you know, a contributing factor to many of these incidences? I mean, could you go dry?
Well, I really believe, and I've thought through much of my career as a leader in higher education, I've lived with this issue because it's on any college campus. Most important thing is don't drive it underground. Do not drive it underground, because kids drink. There's nothing you or I are going to do to keep that from happening, right? And if you drive it underground, two things happen. You don't have any visibility of what's happening, and that's when really horrible things happen. You want to have a system that counsels people, works with students, has them understand the results of their behavior. In my matriculation address, I have the most graphic paragraph I can think about that I talk about with students and the faculty about what the cost-benefit is for them.
It's you talk with them about it every year as they're
coming in? Every
year
at matriculation with their parents in the room. Because drinking is not going to go away. It has not gone away in the whole history of man. It's the minute people figured out how to ferment something, people start drinking, and they're not going to stop, right? I still remember as a kid growing up in Texas, driving through the town of Waco, Texas, which is on the way between Austin and Dallas. And Waco, I don't know if it still is, I've been there years, was the largest dry community in the United States. And you could find the border of Waco, Texas on every road into and out of Waco by the size of this massive liquor store that surrounded it. So Waco was dry, but it was surrounded by liquor stores, right? That's not a good image. That's where I stand.
As you just heard, Robert Brown grew up in Texas. And as we've discovered in our conversations with college presidents, like many others, Brown is part of a generation of academic leaders who came from humble origins. But in the 50s and 60s, encouraging families, lower costs, and expanded access to education provided a unique combination that propelled capable, ambitious people to powerful positions. This same generation is now presiding over a higher ed system where the increasing cost of college has driven student loan debt to more than $1 trillion. Brown is profoundly aware of that fact, as you'll hear in a moment. But first, a little more on the BU president's upbringing in Texas.
Well, I was actually raised by a single parent, by my mother. And I have a sister much older than I am. So it was a very small family, just my mother and myself, and the relatives that she had in San Antonio, Texas. And the family I come from just had no college graduates at that point. When I went to college, I was the first in my family to complete a four-year education. And my desire was to have a profession that my family and I viewed as something that was a solid profession and you could raise your standard of living and enjoy a professional life. So I went to college to become, and it turned out through a funny sequence of things, to become a chemical engineer. And with no desire beyond that, because I didn't come from a family that had those kinds of aspirations. And all I wanted to do at that point was do research and teaching. I was fortunate enough to be offered a position at MIT, and that was 1979, and rose through the ranks at MIT to become provost, and then was offered the position, wonderful position, to become president at BU and 7 years ago.
In that time, what do you think some of the most notable accomplishments have been under your tenure so far?
Well, Boston University is an incredibly unique institution. It's an old institution, 1869, incorporated as a full university. Our roots go back to 1839 and has been in Boston through its entire tenure as a major university in the city. So we're an old institution with a lot of traditions and a lot of values that go all the way back to our Methodist founding, but we're a very young institution as a major private research university. So if you look, I'll give you two numbers. I'm a numbers guy, so I apologize. In 1971, the entire research volume of Boston University, including the medical campus, was $13 million. Today, it's over $500 million. Okay. And there are very few institutions with that kind of a remarkable change over that period of time. It sounds like a long time, 40 years, but on the other side, it's really the blink of an eye in terms of the evolution of these institutions. So we're a very rapidly changing institution.
I mean, with that kind of rapid growth, has there been any drawback to that speed of growth? Because, some might say that maybe perhaps there was too much emphasis on research and not enough on, you know, core education?
Well, it's a great question. And one of the things I think that, like I said, we're an old university, has changed rapidly. We've had strong values around quality education, both undergraduate and professional graduate education, that is really the legacy of generations at the institution. And we've worked very hard, and I think relatively successfully, to not lose those values within our faculty and our staff. We're very much focused on education as the core business of the institution while we've become a research university at the same time. Can we continue to do that for a long, long time? That's a challenge, right? Because institutions, as they focus more and more on research, tend to lose some of that value on education. Right now, we're, I think, in a pretty good place relative to that balance.
You're listening to Boston University President Robert Brown. He's part of our ongoing series of conversations with Massachusetts college presidents about the current shape of higher education, including its successes, challenges, and, of course, the ever-increasing cost of a college degree. That's a subject that Robert Brown told me keeps him up at night.
You know, if you look out around the world today, only in the United States will you find privately operated higher education institutions that are at the top of the list of the best institutions. It's only in the United States. In every other country, what you'll find, either they don't have the concept of private institutions or they're not the best institutions. And the state-owned institutions, whether they're owned by the federal government, by a local state institution, are the high-quality institutions. The U.S., because of a combination of the market that's grown up and the ability to charge tuition that fairly represents the value of the institution, and philanthropy, people giving money to the institutions, has led to this very unique mix. And that system, which is really a market-based system, if you think about it, has led to private institutions being able to thrive. Still, we have to always be concerned about how you operate, where the money comes from, and what the value we're giving to the consumer, and the consumer in this case is the student.
For the 2012-2013 academic year, tuition, room, board, everything total for undergraduates at Boston University was $56,000. You know, I wonder, first of all, do you think that the availability of federal loan dollars, for example, as some have said, is one of the things that seems to be driving the relentless increase in college tuition, you know, across the board?
When you look at private institutions like Boston University that has a relatively small endowment. Our endowment in dollars sounds like a very big number. It's a little over $1 billion. But in terms of the income from that endowment's impact on our budget, it supplies about 3% of our total budget. So what happens within the institution is that all of the pressures of normal business feels, all of those costs have to be borne by the other income streams. The major income streams to a Boston University are tuition and fees and research dollars. As a result of that, there's an inflationary pressure against us that you'd say, well, doesn't that look like the CPI, the Consumer Price Index? The answer, unfortunately, is it's higher than the CPI. Why? Because we're in a very expensive business. When you want to do today in the world of quality higher education, there's really no economies of scale, right? We operate at about a 12 to 1 on a big average at the undergraduate level, 12 to 1, 13 to 1 student to faculty ratio. We don't have a mechanism of picking up the efficiencies that people associate with, say, a manufacturing industry. Quality higher education hasn't found that magic bullet. And have federal loans driven that? I wouldn't say they've driven it, because that pressure's built into the system.
Regardless.
If you want to be a high-quality private institution.
It seems to me that there are no countervailing forces that would force higher education to seek efficiencies wherever it can, because there's growing demand in terms of more and more students want access to higher education every year. For as long as some sort of funding, whether it be through grants, loans, whatever, students will do what they can to cobble that together. Those things in combination make me think that on the one hand, the cost of the tuition increase is alarming to some, but on the other hand, what, if anything, could actually stop it?
I think you're right. And if you look at salary data, lifetime salary data, from the Department of Labor Statistics, what you see is that over your lifetime, there's nothing that you can do that will have as much value as a higher education degree. But on the other side, universities have a real responsibility, and I think this is something that is changing, to really think about the careers of the people that graduate. So universities, I think, are starting to be much more sensitive to the outcomes of higher education.
I do wonder, though, doesn't the weight of this issue or this problem feel a little different now than maybe it did a generation ago? Because as you were saying earlier, you're part of a generation of Americans who, when dollar for dollar of inflation adjusted, it didn't cost as much. And yet now you know all the stories of students graduating who, you know, may be facing monthly payments on loans, $1,000 as soon as they graduate. I mean, those are some of the extreme cases. But, you know, it feels granularly different.
Well, I think the thing that is happening in the United States that is most troubling to me is about access. Because what these institutions can do, an institution like Boston University has the opportunity to have a large fraction of its class that have the financial ability to pay the rate. But from a socioeconomic point of view for the country and for just the fairness to quality students and for our own self-interest of bringing the highest quality students that we can, you want to have students in the institution that would not have access if they look at the gross tuition number. So you take institutions like Boston University. We give a very large amount of undergraduate financial aid. The preponderance of it is given on a need, on a combination of need and merit. We don't have enough to be need blind. We're need blind admission, but we can't meet full need on the financial aid side. And so we give more aid to needy students who are more qualified than ones that are less qualified. And the result of that is that we're basically taking a lot of tuition dollars that are being paid in aggregate by people who are paying close to the full fare, and giving them to more needy students. And so it's a pretty blunt instrument to say, well, if we lowered the tuition, we would be better. Because if we lowered the tuition, what would happen is these people would pay at the high end would pay less, and there'd be less financial aid to give to the low end. The two numbers are coupled. The problem is how families, and this is coupled again to the recession, are dealing with how the family contributions being paid, and things have turned themselves on their head. You know, home equity loans with people having lots of equity in their houses, which they had in the last decades, that they could take home equity loans to pay for their parent contribution. A lot of that has evaporated. You know, that's putting a lot of pressure on the system. You know, that's not to say we don't have issues and we don't have challenges about controlling costs inside the institution, but that's around this model that I talked about that we don't get the economies of scale in the educational system we have.
Any other thoughts that you want to share with people who are listening about you, about Boston University?
Oh, out there we have 300,000 living alums. Come back! You know, it's a great institution. We're doing wonderful things. The quality of the institution, the quality of the students and the faculty today is best it's ever been.
Sounds like you're enjoying your job.
Well, it's good days. This is a good day.
Well, President Brown, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Robert Brown is the president of Boston University. Let us know what you think about that fundamental cost-quality challenge he talked about. And to hear more of our College President series, go to radioboston.org. Stay with us, because up next, the great whites in Massachusetts waters this summer have nothing on the original big fish celebrated on Martha's Vineyard this weekend. Jaws Fest is coming up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.